Welcome to the Ipsos Politics Talk podcast with me, Holly Day, and my colleague, Cameron Garrett. Hey, Cameron.
Hey, Holly.
So you'll notice that we're without Kieran today, but there's been so much going on that we thought it was worth keeping everyone up to date with the goings-on in Parliament and public opinion, because the news cycle is moving on at high speed. So where to start, Cameron? I mean, there's been so much happening. Probably we're starting at the recent scenes in Parliament.
Yep, I feel like we've had by-elections, Parliament falling apart, Liz Truss in America. It's all a lot to keep up with. But yeah, Parliament last week on the SNP's opposition day, they got to put forward a motion on Israel-Gaza, and then the Lindsay Hoyle controversially accepted both amendments from Labour and the Conservatives, which broke precedent and then seemed to break Parliament. It all seemed to fall apart. And I think lots of commentators have been saying it's not Parliament at its best, which I think really cuts across public opinion at the minute. The public are pretty glum and have a negative opinion towards politicians. So 2 in 3 overall say the country's heading in the wrong direction. And it's been the majority of people saying that for like nearly 2 years now. Only 15% think we're going in the right direction. You may have seen the Veracity Index out last year. That put trust in politicians at its lowest in 40 years, just 12%. And I just, seems like that aren't going to be having a positive impact on trying to remedy some of this stuff. I don't know, what did you think?
Yeah, it was quite a strange thing to watch, because it's such a foreign affairs it's one of those things that I think always it always gets people's backs up. It's always quite controversial, everyone always has a strong opinion, but the way that that came across to the general public, I mean, the extent to which people were genuinely following it, and it will and we'll see an impact in the polls, I think that might be something we can look out for in the next podcast that we do. But as a spectacle and the aftermath in kind of from political journalists and people like us who follow this pretty religiously, it wasn't a good look. And the fact that this whole debate then came down to precedent and parliamentary procedure rather than the fact that they were all there to sit down and debate how they should move ahead and take a position on Israel and Gaza. Yeah, I think it was probably quite disappointing from all sides. Interesting to see how that might have affected the SNP in the polls, because they were obviously the key players. As you said, it was their day for debate. And we did a Scottish Political Monitor poll that was out before that. So again, we might not see the results of that. But we have seen in the past few months that we've been doing that poll that the SNP lead has been squeezed. So on the latest poll in February, the SNP were on 39% vote intention, Labour 7 points behind that on 32, the Conservatives down around the 14-15% mark. But that gap was a 12-point difference last May and is now down to 7. So it would be interesting to see in the aftermath of that, has that had any sort of impact in making people feel more favourable about the SNP for what they were standing up for? Or has the whole debacle done the kind of, you know, the classic plague upon all those houses situation in the polls? So we'll be able to look at that next month. How do you think like the Conservatives and Labour came out of it?
Whether it's going to impact GB voting intention, I would be surprised, because as you said, it's quite a niche topic that even people who are really engaged in politics, I think, had to, I was reading explainers or so, okay, what exactly has happened here, and wrapping my head around it, and I follow it quite closely. So I would be surprised if it impacts voting intention on that level, apart from, as you say, like plague on both your houses, what the hell's going on, and contributing to that just general feeling of decline. But looking at some of our satisfaction ratings and how the leaders are doing at the minute, we've got a political pulse out this week where we ask favourability for basically all the main players and riders between the parties. At the minute, Starmer is coming out as the most popular politician in the UK, but it's not saying much. He's got 30% saying favourable to him, 41% unfavourable, so he's got a rating of minus 11.
The most popular. Not something to shout about, really, is it?
Yeah, exactly. But Sunak is down 20% favourable, 54% unfavourable, minus 34. And I think we've said lots of times on this podcast that the polls are suggesting Labour are going to win this election, but it's going to be interesting what happens post-election when he's basically going to be the most unpopular leader of the opposition to become prime minister ever in like the past 40 years we've been polling. Not ever. I wish we were polling in the 1800s, but alas.
I think it's interesting what you say there, though, about him being like the most popular of all the UK politicians, because our political pulse has had some quite good traction this week since we released it, and I saw people calling him the least unpopular, which is a different way of framing, saying exactly the same thing, I guess, which might be a bit of a fairer way of framing it.
Yeah, I've seen lots on X, as it's now called as well, about how people really rate David Cameron, and the polling, like saying he's doing a good job as Foreign Secretary, and by being in the House of Lords, he's helped to kind of go above party politics, etc. But it's not reflected in the polling for him. Unfortunately for him, he's got 18% favourable, 49% unfavourable, so on minus 31. So kind of comparable to Sunak's numbers there. How's this playing out on leaders and their images? What have you've got some deep dive numbers, haven't you, Holly?
Yeah, I think it's interesting. You mentioned Sunak's personal rating there being at minus 34. That actually, in Political Pulse, matches the party rating for the Conservative Party as well. So I know it was probably sometime early last year. It feels like a long time ago now. But there was a discrepancy between what we were seeing with the Conservative Party polling and Sunak's polling, and the Conservatives were doing worse than him. He's kind of slipped down to that level now, and they've been pretty neck and neck for quite a while. Labour on net minus one, which again, still a minus rating, but it's been pretty consistent in the same way that Starmer's rating's been pretty consistent around the kind of net zero level. I think where Sunak is struggling at the moment is on those personal characteristics. So we ask a lot of questions on the image of the party leaders and what sort of attributes do people think that they do or don't have. And on the kind of 10 plus measures that we poll, Starmer is ahead on every single attribute, some of them by double-digit figures, and I'm talking like teens and 20s, particularly high ones on understanding the problems facing Britain, of which I think we can all agree we have a few, given everything that's been going on recently. Being in touch with ordinary people, Starmer leads by 19 points there as well. Having a plan, Starmer leads by 13 points, and that's interesting because that's clearly been one of the recent Conservative attack lines, that the Conservatives have a plan, Sunak has a plan, and Labour don't. So we're maybe not seeing that cut through in the way that they would hope. But I think it's worrying for Sunak that on every single one of these measures, Starmer is in the lead. And we might have seen some of that play out in the by-elections, I think, although they're fought on local issues. They're often, in these sort of situations, can be a bit of a reflection on the National Party, although obviously the caveats that we're towards the end of a parliament, there are local issues at play, there are local candidates. What did you think of the, we had a couple of big by-elections recently, and it feels like people didn't make a massive deal out of them because we've just got a bit used to these sorts of swings and these kind of results. But actually, if you look historically, there were some kind of record-breaking results, weren't they?
Yeah, I think you've hit the nail on the head that the surprising thing is how unsurprised people are about this. In Wellingborough, like a swing to Labour of 28.5%, the largest since like Tony Blair just before the 97 election. Similarly in Kingswood, big swing, Labour on 44%, 10-point lead over the Conservatives. Obviously lower turnout, as you say, but I think it's interesting how they were. The line immediately was like, people aren't that enthused by Labour. Like, they're not turning out. Their vote shares, not their votes, their number of votes is similar to 2019, which is a total misnomer. But actually, swings like that, that's what you want to be seeing before an election. Like, this is good for them. And I think it's also interesting over the by-elections we've seen over the past year that the Conservatives are losing more or less up and down the country, whether it's down in the southwest, up north, they're kind of defending all fronts.
Yeah, and I saw a good statistic that Starmer's victories in this parliament, in the by-elections, exceed or match 5 out of the last 7 leaders of the opposition. So he's clearly doing, well, whether he's doing something right or the Conservatives are doing something wrong, that's for other people to comment on, but as you said, the fact that people aren't surprised by swings of nearly 30%, must worry the Conservative Party. And I think with the direction of travel, if that continues, as it has been now over kind of 6 to 12 months with all of the by-elections that we've had and a couple of others potentially coming up, I think I heard on a rival podcast that if that were to be reflected, that swing were to be reflected across the country, the Conservatives would be left with 4 seats. And that's clearly a ridiculous thing to say, because that is not to predict the future, but that's not going to happen right across the whole country. What? But that does kind of show and illustrate the scale of some of these swings, some of these victories and some of these turnarounds, as you said, in safe Conservative seats across the country. Brexit heartlands, red wall, it kind of doesn't really matter where it is at the minute, by the looks of it.
What's our rival podcast, Holly?
That one was the News Agents.
Emily Maitlis.
Aspire big. We'll get there someday. I think another interesting part of those results, and that was spoken about a lot afterwards, was the performance of Reform UK. And we obviously don't want to overstate their performance. They received 10% of the vote in Kingswood, 13% in Wellingborough, so still comfortably in third place in both, but that they were their best results that they've had in any by-elections.
Yeah.
And they've said, unlike in the last election, they're going to stand in every seat. And if you remember in 2019, as the Brexit Party, they took a step back, a bit of a deal with Boris Johnson, and that enabled the Conservatives to maybe win in some places more comfortably than they would have otherwise done. What do you think going forward the impact might be? Because I know we've done a little experiment on this recently, haven't we?
Yep, of the Reform UK. So I think it's interesting they were hitting double digits, where pollsters have kind of had them, we have them usually around like 5-6%, but other people out there have had them in double digits. So I think it's interesting they've hit it. Obviously, it's a by-election, so whether that's going to be reflected on a national picture, we'll have to wait and see. And I think Paula Sturridge has done an interesting piece where she's said actually if they were polling in double digits nationally, they would have expected to do a bit better there. But definitely double digits good, and they exceeded their previous record of where they'd got 6% in Old Bexley and Sidcup, which was where I grew up, so damn to have that record stolen off us. But as you said, we did do a experiment of whether Reform UK would be doing better if they were led by Nigel Farage. So we just asked people generally up front, how favourable, unfavourable are you to Reform UK? And they got a net favourability of -23. Then we said, okay, imagine they were led by Nigel Farage. Do you reckon how favourable would you be towards them then? And they got -20. So not a massive shift, like 3 points. But I think it's interesting looking at amongst 2019 Conservatives, Reform UK, their favourability numbers generally is at -1. If Farage was leader, it shoots up to -13. So a 14-point gap and up into positives. And that's who they're targeting, basically, isn't it? Disaffected Conservative voters. So I think that's going to be a massive thing to watch out for over the next few months. What is Farage doing? Does he go and lead the Reform UK? I mean, some people already think he does.
I mean, whether he can resist his 27th comeback, I'm not sure. I think it's probably it might be that he plays some part and isn't the leader, and it would be interesting what sort of effect that has on campaigning. I've seen a few Reform UK MPs kind of alluding to that sort of thing, that even if he just came back in some sort of situation, not necessarily the leader, they'd be expecting a bounce potentially in their numbers, and that was specifically in relation to our Pulse polling. So good that we're getting bites from the powers that be on that one. In terms of what's coming up then, we've covered a lot over the past couple of weeks, but it's not slowing down. There's still a lot coming up. We've got yet more by-elections. Love a by-election. They're like buses, 15 of them all come at once. So we've got Rochdale up in my neck of the woods. We won't go into the details of that, but there's all sorts of local issues, candidate issues that might make that one a bit trickier to kind of deduce anything from, to be honest. But it's going to be a really interesting one to see what the backlash off the back of that one is, and potentially another one in Blackpool South, because it was announced that Scott Benton is facing a recall petition up there for breaking lobbying rules. So we'll wait and see if that leads to a by-election. But that one, I think it's about a 2,500-3,000 majority for the Conservatives, so a lot lower majority than we've seen in the by-elections that we've already covered, and there have been massive swings. So that one could really be one to look out for. Quite a few ongoing, I don't know if to call them scandals, just a lot happening in the Conservative Party at the moment that's out on the airwaves that's keeping us busy. And then also the more serious point of the budget on the horizon, right?
Yeah, that's what I was going to say. I'm particularly looking forward to the budget. Look out for some polling from us on that next week. What rabbit is Jeremy Hunt going to try and pull out of the hat? Will there be tax cuts? Is there the room for them? Would the public rather they be investing in public services? Do look out for that. Lots to say there, including who's the best chancellor this century so far? Any guesses, Holly?
The best chancellor this century. Are the public going to pick someone who's not actually been chancellor yet? Because the shadow chancellors have been polling pretty favorably in recent years.
As a spoiler, none of them was included. check out there.
Yeah, some heavy don't know percentages on that one. I can think. Well, that's all we got time for today, anyway. But keep an eye out for the next episode. We're obviously going to be giving our reactions on the budget, as we've discussed, when we see what Jeremy Hunt has decided, and also whether Kieran and Torsten Bell, the chief executive of the Resolution Foundation, and their predictions in the recent podcast have come to fruition. So that would be an interesting one to quiz Kieran on when we come back. Also keen to hear any questions anyone's ever got that they want us to cover, so send those in, and we're going to do our best to keep you all up to date on public perceptions and polling in what's sure to be an exciting election year.
Thanks, Holly.